on this edition for Saturday, May 30th. From East Coast to West Coast, nationwide unrest as the country reacts to the death of George Floyd. Next on PBS NewsHour Weekend.
PBS NewsHour Weekend is made possible by Bernard and Irene Schwartz, Sue and Edgar Wackenheim III, the Cheryl and Philip Milstein family, Rosalind P. Walter, Barbara Hope Zuckerberg, Charles Rosenblum. We try to live in the moment to not miss what's right in front of us. At Mutual of America, we believe taking care of tomorrow can help you make the most of today. Mutual of America Financial Group, retirement services and investments. Additional support has been provided by and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. And by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.
Good evening and thanks for joining us. States and cities across the country are preparing for more demonstrations, calling up National Guard units, and considering the federal government's offer to deploy active duty troops after violent protests last night. Demonstrations spread after the death of George Floyd, a black man who died after a white Minneapolis police officer kneeled on his neck for 9 minutes. That officer is now charged with third-degree murder. Many legal and peaceful gatherings continue today to grieve and demand justice for Floyd and for others. But last night, demonstrators set fires, smashed windows, and attacked police officers in many places. And officials say, in some cases, outsiders are behind the violence. NewsHour Weekend's Megan Thompson begins our coverage in Minneapolis, where George Floyd died last Monday.
Cleanup began this morning in Minneapolis after violence rocked the city for a fourth straight night. Thousands of protesters took to the streets last night in defiance of an 8 p.m. curfew, setting buildings and cars on fire, looting local businesses, and firing on law enforcement. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin was charged yesterday with murder and manslaughter in the death of George Floyd. Floyd died after Chauvin kneeled on his neck during an arrest on Monday. Three other officers involved are still under investigation. Despite Chauvin's arrest, the rioting escalated overnight. Police, state troopers, and 700 National Guard troops tried to calm the chaos while firefighters worked to contain the blazes. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey held a press conference at 1:30 in the morning, pleading with protesters to stop.
I'm deeply concerned with the people who need to go home. You need to go home. This is not about George's death. This is not about inequities that were real. This is about chaos being caused.
There is no honor in burning down your city. There is no pride in looting.
This morning, Governor Walz announced a full mobilization of the Minnesota National Guard, activating another 1,000 troops, the largest domestic deployment in the state's history.
Our great cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul are under assault by people who do not share our values, who do not value life and the work that went into this, and certainly are not here to honor George Floyd.
As Minneapolis prepares for more protests, I spoke with Minnesota Public Radio reporter Matt Sepik, who was on the streets during both peaceful protests and as violence broke out last night. Matt, you were out in the streets last night. What did you see?
Utter chaos. I walked for many miles throughout the Lake Street area in South Minneapolis, which has been the heart of the unrest here in the city. There were fires everywhere, a very light law enforcement presence for most of the evening. Later on, some National Guard troops were finally able to get through to assist and protect firefighters who were putting out a gas station fire, one of many fires burning in structures along Lake Street.
Well, what do we know about the people who were responsible for this? What are authorities saying now?
At a news conference this morning, St. Paul Mayor Melvin Carter said the number of people that they arrested last night were all from out of town. Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota says that the demonstrations have moved from legitimate protest and civil disobedience to out and out rioting that has nothing to do with protesting the murder, in his words, of Mr. George Floyd.
Give me an idea of the neighborhoods where this is happening. Who lives there? What's it like for people who are not familiar with the city?
Lake Street is a very diverse area, working class, many immigrant businesses, many people of color, a lot of restaurants. There's a large Hispanic community, Latino community that lives along Lake Street, and much of it now is destroyed. A lot of these businesses that have taken generations to be built were gone in a night of rioting.
Have you seen the size of the peaceful portions of the protest stay the same, increase, decrease, the type of people who are coming?
They appear to be the same. There was a protest just before sunset, before the curfew yesterday on Interstate 35W through downtown Minneapolis. They marched, they closed down the freeway, as you have seen in past protests. And that dispersed and people walked away. And on Thursday evening, there was a similar protest outside the Hennepin County Government Center in downtown Minneapolis, demanding the prosecution of the police officers involved. Again, that was a peaceful protest. The actions that you're seeing with looting and rioting, the governor, other authorities here say this is a separate group of people. Many of them do not live here, and they're coming in to foment chaos because they see the tension that has built and the anger that has built following the death of George Floyd.
Matt, give me an idea of the size of the crowds versus the size of the police forces that are trying to contain them.
Governor Tim Walz said in an overnight news conference that police, the National Guard, the Minnesota State Patrol were vastly outnumbered by looters and rioters who were on the streets. They just did not have the personnel to focus on all of the places that they needed to focus on to deal with the large numbers of people who were coming into town to foment chaos.
Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
President Trump commented on last night's protests in Washington, D.C. in a series of tweets today. And in New York, officials reacted to videos of police behavior from demonstrations there. NewsHour Weekend's Yvette Feliciano has more.
In New York, protests turned violent last night as police clashed with crowds for a second day in a row. Some protesters in Brooklyn threw water bottles and fireworks at police, and videos captured a police van on fire. Some people were hospitalized and busloads were arrested. Officers used eye-irritating chemicals, moving vehicles, and batons to disperse the crowds. A widely circulated video showed one officer violently pushing a woman to the ground. When asked about that video in a press conference this morning, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio called violent police reactions on peaceful protesters unacceptable and announced an independent investigation to determine who is responsible. But he also condemned protesters who subjected the police to what he called horrible and violent things that would not stand.
Because they are working men and women, and any protester tries to take the humanity away from a police officer and devalue them just because they are a public servant is no better than the racists who devalue people of color, and particularly black men in America.
Also last night in Washington, D.C., police attempted to dispel hundreds of protesters chanting curses at President Trump in front of the White House. The U.S. Secret Service enacted a partial lockdown of the building. In a tweet this morning, the president said that had protesters breached the fence, they would have been greeted with the most vicious dogs and most ominous weapons I have ever seen, adding, "Many Secret Service agents just waiting for action. We put the young ones on the front line, sir. They love it and good practice."
For more on the protests in Washington, D.C. and President Trump's response, I spoke with Philip Rucker, the Washington Post's White House bureau chief. Philip, it's not every day that we see protesters actually start going at the White House. I mean, it's a place in front of the White House that we've seen all sorts of protests. It's tradition. But last night seemed different.
It sure did. What we saw was a number of protesters through the city of Washington converging on the White House and demanding racial justice. We've seen similar demonstrations in a number of cities over the last 24, 48 hours. And it came right up to President Trump's home. And he has been tweeting that he actually watched it all from the windows of the White House residence.
And his response, was classic President Trump, not what you'd expect.
It was not. You know, his response to the protests in front of the White House on Friday night was to thank the Secret Service for their work containing the crowds, but also using some really interesting language. He talked about the dogs being vicious, referring apparently to police dogs, a reference to the law enforcement tactics that we saw in the 1960s in this country, a really jarring reference for him to make, especially after the comments that he made about looters and shooters a day earlier in reference to Minneapolis.
That phrase is also something that segregationists used in the 60s. The president tried to clarify that that was not his intention yesterday, but it seemed a little confusing, even the clarification.
It was confusing. It's unclear what the president was trying to communicate when he used that phrase. But that, of course, is a phrase that the police chief in Miami back in the 60s would use in regard to going after robbers and other vandals in Black neighborhoods in that city. It was very much a racially charged phrase. The president claimed he didn't know the origins of the phrase. But it's unclear where he heard it from, but clearly it was a dog whistle, as many of his supporters heard it.
These protests are happening, and this conversation's happening, when the president is also trying to steer the nation towards the topic of China, towards the topic of Twitter and censorship, while we still have a massive pandemic that hasn't ended.
That's right. What we've seen from the president the last few weeks is the deliberate effort to try to distract and divert attention from the pandemic and from what many public health experts see as the failures of the federal government to contain the spread of the coronavirus and save lives, and focus instead on a number of diversions from Trump's conspiratorial allegations about President Trump and Vice President Biden to his spreading a debunked conspiracy theory about a cable show host, Joe Scarborough, being implicated somehow in the death of a young staffer more than two decades ago. A number of distractions from the president that seem aimed, according to my reporting, at generating alternative headlines and storylines for him that he thinks would be helpful in the campaign, but ultimately end up trying to distract his supporters and other Americans from the crisis playing out every day in our country.
Philip Rucker of the Washington Post, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Officials in Atlanta, Georgia are reeling after peaceful demonstrations turned violent. NewsHour Weekend's Christopher Booker has more.
We are all angry. This hurts. This hurts everybody in this room. But what are you changing by tearing up a city?
Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms' impassioned question came after a night of intense confrontation between protesters and city police. Earlier in the day, as the sun started to set, demonstrators had gathered near Atlanta's Centennial Olympic Park to march to the state capitol. The night turned as splinter groups broke from the peaceful assembly and law enforcement officers advanced into the demonstrators with batons. As a police car burned, the groups moved toward the entrance of CNN's Atlanta headquarters, smashing windows and throwing projectiles at a line of police officers inside the building's lobby. In response to Friday's unrest, Georgia Governor Brian Kemp declared a state of emergency and activated nearly 500 National Guard troops. And Mayor Bottoms recruited Atlanta rapper and activist Killer Mike in her call for calm.
I woke up wanting to see the world burn down yesterday because I'm tired of seeing Black men die. He casually put his knee on a human being's neck for 9 minutes as he died like a zebra in the clutch of a lion's jaw. And we watch it like murder porn over and over again. So that's why children are burning to the ground. They don't know what else to do. Now is the time to plot, plan, strategize, organize, and mobilize.
For more on the protests in Atlanta last night and the reaction from city leaders, I spoke with Sudhin Thanawala, a reporter for the Associated Press who is covering events there. Sudhin, we saw the mayor, we saw Killer Mike, we saw lots of people pleading with the citizens of Atlanta to stop burning down their own city last night. How severe was it? Because oftentimes we see just a little glimpse of the city. What was happening?
There was a significant amount of damage, but really this started off as a peaceful protest. There were thousands of people who gathered in a park downtown and marched for a couple of hours to City Hall, to the state capitol, and then came back. And then you had a group of several hundred protesters who ended up confronting police outside CNN headquarters. And this was on a small side street, so not the main street in front of CNN. And that's when you really started seeing some violence. They spray painted the CNN sign. They began breaking windows at CNN. Police, for the most part, they did come over when the protesters started breaking windows at CNN, but they were pelted with bottles, plastic bottles. Police have told us that protesters threw knives at them. So it progressed from there. Then they smashed police cars, set one on fire, and then they began going around in that area in general. We're talking about a few blocks here, smashing windows, looting some stores, restaurants, and it was confined to that area for much of the night until really late when protesters went to another part of the city a little farther north, where again they vandalized, looted stores. This is in an area called Buckhead, north of downtown.
What's the city planning to do tonight or the nights after?
We haven't heard yet. It's still a little early here this morning, and we are asking police officials what their plans are. The mayor addressed this last night. She said she is concerned about another night like this. And she really pleaded with protesters. She invoked this city's civil rights legacy. Dr. King was born here, of course. His daughter spoke. She spoke quite eloquently about the anger she felt when her father was assassinated. But she said, you know, violence isn't the way to go. So they're hoping for the best. We haven't heard of an exact plan right now. We do know that the governor declared a state of emergency in this county, Fulton County, and deployed the National Guard. And we know there he also sent in reinforcements from the state police. And so there's definitely going to be a bigger police presence today and going forward.
Is this different? Does it feel different compared to other times there has been any unrest?
I think it does a little bit. I think what we saw in terms of the violence was unusual. I think Atlanta does have a history of peaceful, relatively peaceful protests. And there just seemed to be just more anger and frustration at what's going on. You know, a number of the protesters I talked to just said enough is enough, you know, they're looking at some of these recent incidents, of course, the one involving George Floyd, but also Ahmaud Arbery here that we had in Georgia. And, you know, a couple of the people I talked to said, you know, that could be me. And they're just very, very concerned about their safety, about their lives.
Sudhin Thanawala from the Associated Press joining us from Atlanta. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Harry.
For more on the aftermath of George Floyd's death and continuing coverage of protests across the nation, visit pbs.org/newshour. The number of coronavirus cases continues to rise in the U.S., even as restrictions on gatherings and businesses are being lifted with new safety guidelines in place. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported more than 21,000 new cases yesterday and more than 1,200 new deaths. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo announced yesterday that New York City, the epicenter of the virus and the only remaining region in the state that has yet to lift restrictions, is expected to start its first phase of reopening on June 8th. A divided U.S. Supreme Court rejected an appeal from a California church last night that challenged state limits on attendance at services due to COVID-19. Chief Justice John Roberts joined the court's four liberal justices in the 5-4 decision denying the appeal from the Pentecostal church near San Diego. The church claimed that limits on gatherings violated its constitutional guarantee of religious freedom. Justice Roberts, in an individual opinion, said that because restrictions also apply to other gatherings, it does not violate First Amendment rights. California Governor Gavin Newsom closed churches and other places of worship to the public in March, but began allowing up to 25% of building capacity, or 100 people, whichever is smaller, to attend services this past week. German Chancellor Angela Merkel's office said today that she will not personally attend the G7 conference if it is held next month in the United States due to COVID-19. The G7 was canceled because of the pandemic, but last week President Donald Trump said he is considering moving forward with hosting the meeting of world leaders. Merkel's office added that her decision could change depending on how the coronavirus spreads. The Group of Seven summit of the world's top economies was originally scheduled to be held at Camp David in mid-June, but no official new date has been set. Just days after reopening, hundreds of schools in South Korea are closing after spikes in coronavirus cases. South Korea reported 39 new cases today, many connected to an outbreak at an e-commerce distribution center outside Seoul. Earlier this week, many schools opened for the first time in more than 2 months, with students greeted with hand sanitizers and temperature checks. But after the recent uptick in cases, health officials decided to re-close schools as well as museums and parks. For the first time in nearly a decade, a crewed mission to space launched from the United States today. Astronauts Douglas Hurley and Robert Bacon took off in the SpaceX Dragon capsule this afternoon. If all goes according to plan, they will arrive at the International Space Station tomorrow. President Trump and Vice President Pence were both on hand today to witness the launch. The first attempt on Wednesday was called off just 16 minutes before launch. This is the first crewed mission from U.S. soil since the space shuttle program ended in 2011, and the first ever in a privately made spacecraft. That's all for this edition of PBS NewsHour Weekend. For the latest news updates, visit pbs.org/newshour. I'm Hari Srinivasan. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and have a good night.
PBS NewsHour Weekend is made possible by Bernard and Irene Schwartz, Sue and Edgar Wackenheim III, the Cheryl and Philip Milstein family, Rosalind P. Walter, Barbara Hope Zuckerberg, Charles Rosenblum. We try to live in the moment to not miss what's right in front of us. At Mutual of America, we believe taking care of tomorrow can help you make the most of today. Mutual of America Financial Group, retirement services and investments.
When it comes to wireless, Consumer Cellular gives its customers the choice. Our no-contract plans give you as much or as little talk, text, and data as you want. And our U.S.-based customer service team is on hand to help. To learn more, go to consumercellular.tv.
Additional support has been provided by and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.
You're watching PBS.